How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio's July 20, 2026, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got a lot of news to get into here today. And we're going to start with the Vince McMahon, Janelle Grant lawsuit, which I guess we're never going to hear about it again.
Well, we will when the arbitration's over.
But I mean what are we going to hear?
You know, we may not actually hear the settlement number, but we may hear. I mean, if the settlement number is a decent amount and WWE has to pay, I mean, yeah, we'll hear that.
But if it's something that comes out in a filing, basically.
Yeah, it would come out in the filing, yeah. We still haven't gotten the filing on the settlement to the shareholders case, but they may not have paid it yet, so. Or it may have been paid by Vince McMahon. If it's paid by Vince McMahon, we won't get it.
Yeah.
If it's paid by WWE or TKO, we will get it. So if it's a substantial number.
The judge okayed arbitration, and within 5 business days, the lawsuit will be dismissed as it goes to arbitration.
Yeah. Obviously, they didn't feel, this is the Grant side, they didn't feel that they had, that they were going to win the argument over it not going to arbitration. That was, you know, I mean, she signed the contract. When she signed her NDA, they were trying to get the NDA overturned, and obviously they felt that they couldn't get the NDA overturned. There was a hope that there would be a law changed in Connecticut that would, based on the law itself, they would be able to get it overturned, but that law didn't get, you know, that law is not law yet, if it ever will be. And, you know, they were hoping for, in the shareholders' case, some evidence to come out in that trial that would help their case. And when the trial itself was settled, and there was no trial, it was settled right on the eve of the trial, they did not get any, you know, any evidence that would allow them to get the NDA overturned. And without the NDA overturned, they had to drop the suit, because that was, I mean, she had signed, when she signed her NDA, it was right there saying that if there's any dispute about this NDA, it must be settled in arbitration. It cannot be settled in a lawsuit. So it is quite the interesting story, because on one hand, this thing kind of ends with a whimper. And on the other hand, when you look at the ramifications of this, it's like, this was like one of the biggest things that ever happened in wrestling. I mean, you had, I mean, not for this, Vince McMahon's still running the company. You know, it's a completely different company. We don't have the boom period that we had a couple of years ago. We don't have Ari Emanuel and Dwayne, you know, messing with creative all the time, or at key times.
I think that's low on the list of things that would have changed. I think the biggest change is this thing would have just been like, I mean,
might have. I mean, maybe AEW would have been even stronger than it is now.
Oh, I think it for sure would have been. I don't think there's any question whatsoever. But
there's still people who like are nostalgic for WWE.
Don't do that.
I know.
No one can like. I get it if you were like an Attitude Era fan and you haven't watched since. But there is no.
The Attitude Era was 25 years ago.
I know, Dave. That's the point I'm making. There is no way that if you watched this in the last 3 or 4 years that Vince was in charge, you cannot possibly be reminiscing for that era. There was nothing about it that was any good whatsoever. Guys, do you remember Raw would make no sense? They would have a card for the next week. None of the matches would take place in next week. None of them. I mean, if one took place, it was like, wow, actually one of these matches took place. He tore apart his script every Monday. I mean, it was a disaster. It was a disaster. They cannot possibly bring this guy back. I mean,
oh, well, I mean, as far as bringing him back, that's a whole nother story. I don't know. I mean, it would not shock me that he's brought back in a position, you know, just to
do what?
There. I don't
to
know.
To do they may, what?
They may do. I mean, it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, I don't know that I would expect it. I cannot imagine he would be put in charge of anything. I mean, that, you know, it's not like they're going to have him replace Nick Khan calling the shots. He certainly isn't going to replace Paul Levesque doing the booking. There's no way they can go to that card. That's not going to happen. But the idea of bringing him in a figurehead position, trotting him out every now and then, You know, it like I said, it wouldn't shock me at all. You know, it doesn't. You know, and the funny part is that if he came out as a surprise on a TV show, it'd be like this the giant reaction. I mean, it's just that's the reality of the situation. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it'll happen. I don't know. I mean, I cannot imagine him being put in a position of any real decision making power, though. That I couldn't see. Shapiro and Emanuel aren't going to give up that power that they have in that regard. They're not going to replace Nick Khan. I mean, Nick Khan's gotten very, very powerful and very, very successful. They're not going to replace Levesque, I don't think. Not with Vince, anyway. And I don't think they're going to replace him anyway because they haven't trained anyone for that position. And, you know, who has been, you know, I mean, who's out there that they would trust in that position? I mean, that one of the big problems with wrestling, somebody, in fact, Brian Solomon was just doing a story about this, is that, you know, with so few companies on a national scale and the booking jobs in those companies totally locked. I mean, there's two bookers in pro wrestling as far as like booking on a major national level in this era. You know, I guess three if you include Vince McMahon. There's three, you know, in any kind of a big picture position in the last 15 years. So who's being trained to replace these guys? I guess Sean. But I don't think Sean wants the workload that Levesque has. I can't imagine he would want that. So he's out. And you know, I don't know that his job, that he's done such a great job. You know, Levesque is, I think, pretty solid in his position. I mean, he did a really good job for a couple years there. I would say last year, not so much. This year, I don't know. It's not been his best year, but I mean their business is still doing well though. So, but yeah, I mean the ramifications of Janelle Grant. You take Janelle Grant probably has had more influence on the big picture of pro wrestling than almost anyone in the last 10 years, except for maybe Tony Khan and Nick Khan. I mean that's how much this lawsuit changed the entire business, the entire framework of the business. But in fact, in the end, you know, I mean, it's like everybody was waiting for the fireworks in the lawsuit, and the fireworks came in 2024 when the lawsuit was first released, and a little bit later. But the fireworks at the end, nothing happened in that regard, and nor was it going to. It was never going to go to trial. It could have been, you know, if by some chance they did go to the ruling and they did go that they could go to trial, I mean, there'd be a settlement. I mean, it'd just be whatever the dollar amount is that they could. And in this case, it's not going to even be a big dollar. I mean, I can't say it's not going to be a big dollar amount. I don't know what the you know, the arbitrator will rule, but I'm guessing that at best, the arbitrator is going to rule that she gets the rest of the money that's in that contract that she should get. You know, which is, you know, it's something, but it's not like Vince can't, you know, it's a check to Vince. It's not that, you know, it's not life changing for him whatsoever. It's a slap in the wrist, as all of these things have ended up being on a economic and everything level. And on Vince's side, you know, I mean, the flip side of the Vince thing is, yeah, he's probably frustrated that he's not in power, and he's probably frustrated that he's not running creative. At the same time, he's worth more money than if he was. I mean, he should probably be thanking this because he has gotten far richer selling his stock than he would have been had he maintained the company, you know, the company that was there before, because that company was not going to rise to get this kind of stock price because of the synergies with UFC and other companies and the great increase in you know, sponsorships and things like that that they would not have gotten without you know, TKO, you know, without the people that have gotten it for UFC. So you know, in some ways, yay, he lost his power at an old age, and in other ways he made more money anyway.
We've also got a temporary restraining order granted by a California judge, which is putting on hold this Paramount WBD merger for at least the next 14 days. Could be longer.
It's a 14-day order, but they're going to go in August 3rd. That's the big day. The August 3rd hearing will be to decide whether or not they get a full restraining order that would essentially, if the Bonta side, Rob Bonta, who's the Attorney General from California, and Attorney Generals from 11 other states as well, they are trying to get it to where there is an injunction until trial, until this case is settled to trial, that they cannot take over the company. The trial won't be till next year. They want to take over as early as this week, so you know, it won't be this week. 14 days, it's really meaningless. So it's like, if they can't take over this week, can they take over in 2 weeks? Yes. You know, unless the judge, you know, rules that it will be permanent. This is just basically to not allow the takeover so that that they can basically have a big argument in front of the judge, and the judge then has to rule, is he going to make this thing permanent until the trial, or is he just going to say, okay, the 14 days are over and they can take over, and then they will. The problem is if they get, you know, if they don't get the order, then they'll just take over and, it'll still go to court and everything. But if they get that, and it holds till 2027. I mean, one of the things that the Paramount and Skydance, they basically, in their purchasing deal, starting, I believe it's October 1st, for every day that it doesn't go through, they have to pay money to WBD for, like, because they promised them when they bought the company that they would be able to get through all regulations and they would be able to take over. And if they don't, and this was put in the contract by the WBD side, it ends up being about $220 million every single month. And they would have to pay that every month until at least the trial, either way, to WBD. And, you know, after a while of that, that could get, pretty expensive and pretty messy. And what the deal does is it pressures Paramount Skydance, if this happens, to try to make a settlement with these attorney generals, which would mean, you know, they would have to divest themselves of some things, you know, and maybe that would be all of cable. Although the thing that they're really in this lawsuit, it's not, you know, they're you know, obviously the CNN thing is huge. It's a huge part of this. But the argument that they're really going is the consolidation of the movie business between WBD and Paramount Studios, and that consolidation would cost jobs. And, you know, I mean, that's the main thing that they're going on. And the production of fewer movies, it would hurt the movie business, the theater business, things like that. That's the argument that they're taking. Paramount's kind of in a tough go because their big argument was that it will not do that. While at the same time, when they did it to sell it on their shareholders, they were saying how it's going to lead to cuts in these things due to the overlap of the two companies, which now in court they have to argue, well, we're not going to do this, even though they've actually told their shareholders that they are. So that's been kind of a weird one in there, you know, they, but that's, you know, you tell, you know, I guess they'll probably have to explain all that on August the 3rd with that all, you know, what the judge will probably have to ask, oh, did you say this? And now you're saying this and your arguments. But, you know, that's, you know, it's, that's the basic gist of the whole thing. It's, if they get the thing on August 3rd, there will be negotiations that are going on and to try to get, you know, give back enough to where the thing is approved. And, you know, if that doesn't happen, then in theory, they're going to trial in 2027. And they're not going to be able to take over, which is actually a pretty big deal for UFC and maybe in particular more than anyone, AEW, because UFC's locked into their deal, you know? I mean, like, yeah, that won't be available in as many homes It will hurt if this thing doesn't go through on their side. But AEW, it's a huge thing, you know, because the, you know, if it depends on who picks up what, you know, like, will they be split into two separate deals, which could be good or could be bad, but I know it's not what they would want. I know that Tony Khan, even today, did a big interview, you know, with, was it Yahoo? What was the show that he did? The Yahoo Business show. But anyway, and he was just so enthused about, you know, and he obviously had taped the interview. It would have been taped prior to Friday, because in doing the interview, you know, he was talking about the ratings from the Omega MJF show. And he brought that up multiple times, when obviously the ratings for last week's show were actually better, and he would have brought that up, but he kept saying, you know, the ratings for the show. So, but at that point, I mean, he was just talking up that thing so much. I mean, the one thing, if you watch that, you know, there's always people trying to say that, oh, if they go there, they're doomed. I mean, you know, he may bluff and all this, and, you know, but he sure, and I mean, and it's not just on this show. I mean, in everywhere this subject has come up, he has talked about how excited he is, how David Ellison and him are friends from the NFL, how David Ellison has you know, wanting to get the wrestling thing stronger, how David Ellison is a wrestling fan. David Ellison actually went to wrestling shows when he was younger. I don't know if he is a fan today. He was absolutely a fan during the Austin Rock era. And, it certainly sounds like, if you listen to these things, that Tony Khan is incredibly confident that this deal, as far as for him, is a good one. And I think a lot of the people who have been saying it's the doom, and, you know, it's like they could blindside him too. Nothing's 100%. But, he sure, you know, I mean, there's no hemming and hawing, and there's no, there's nothing. I mean, he's just thinking that this thing would be, and, you know, for both UFC and for AEW, the streaming service that they're on, will be, because the two services are going to would merge. It will reach more homes, so they will all have more viewers, and, you know, the more viewers will mean more growth, and, you know, and that'll help them when, you know, come contract time in 2027, 2028. So, but, you know, that has to be, you know, I mean, that the takeover, which, like, legitimately could have been in the next 2 weeks, and it could be in 3 weeks, and it could be not until 2027, and it could be that they may have to give back the cable stations. I mean, I don't, you know, there's so many ways that they could settle this thing. And, you know, but if they give back the cable stations, then you've kind of got a split product, in the sense that, okay, he's on TV with one company, but he's on pay-per-view with another company, which isn't the end of the world. WWE's in bed with several companies, but it's different. You know, it's not, consolidated in one company, and one guy, if he backs him, you know, the backing isn't necessarily as strong if he doesn't have the TV side as well as the pay-per-view side.
Anything else from the Tony interview?
There was a lot, actually, but I'm just very, very enthusiastic about, you know, I mean, he talked a lot about soccer and football and other sports, a lot about soccer, you know, because of the World Cup, but, you know, very, very enthusiastic about AEW, just talking about, you know, the ratings being the best they've been in a long time, even if you don't include Max, that the pay-per-views are the best that they've ever been, which, I mean, there were, in this latest run, there have been, obviously, some pay-per-views, you know, Punk's first match with Darby, the first Wembley, the All In Texas, the Sting retirement show. Those are, like, I think, the big four. So they have not hit that level, although Double or Nothing did come close to that level. But he mentioned like Double or Nothing was the biggest one so far on HBO Max. Consistently, their pay-per-views are the strongest that they've ever been. And that was kind of like his main message. He just thinks that it's clicking, it's getting stronger. He was asked about why. He said because he thinks that they're just putting on better matches every week, every show. And that's been the cause of the growth. It's interesting because I wonder if, WWE, well, much, much stronger than AEW, they have declined, you know, and it's, you know, has that decline led to the AEW increase, or those two things, one having little or nothing to do with the other? And it's an interesting question. I don't really have a good answer.
I think that one has something to do with the other and has multiple times.
Could be.
When AEW first started, WWE sucked. Yeah. And I think that a ton of people were just dying for something different. And
agreed.
So AEW started very strong. And then around the time of Brawl Out, when they started to have those issues, and there were a lot of issues during that period, mm-hmm. WWE was getting very hot. Cody had jumped over, and I think people jumped over the other way. And now people have kind of, you know, it hasn't really reflected too much in attendance yet, but you can see that people are like, nothing's happening this year. We're not in a lot of this stuff.
WWE attendance is way down this year.
It is down. It's not like it's collapsed. It's still great, but it is down.
It was down
at the same time that AEW is going up. So I think that three times now it's gone back and forth.
Yeah. AEW attendance is still the same. WWE was, they were over 13 last year, and they were like 10-8 so far this year. So it's down. I mean, it's still a great number. It's one of the best numbers in the history of the company. You know, I mean, it's one of their five best years probably, but it's way down from last year, which was their best year ever when it came to average attendance. AEW's average attendance is roughly the same, although some of that is also because they're running smaller buildings, more often. So obviously you're going to have a lower average when you're running smaller buildings. I think that it's been more successful, you know, all things considered, even though the number isn't that far off what it was before, especially, and if you're running smaller buildings, you're probably having lower expenses as well. So maybe the profit margin is higher, or maybe with smaller buildings. One of the things with smaller buildings is you can charge a lot more for tickets because it's, you know, some of those buildings sell out. But as far as like the TV ratings and the pay-per-view, that's doing very well. I don't know if this pay-per-view will do that great. I mean, it will probably be every AEW pay-per-view is a great show, but I think I could see people skipping this one. And I do think though that the Wembley's going to do big for sure. That'll be, you know, one of the five highest in company history. I don't think it will be number one. I think that there's just, you know, but maybe it'll be close to number one because, you know, as far as like, they do have a lot of viewership right now, both younger and older, even though the younger doesn't really reflect as much when you look at the TV ratings, and you know it's there. With older viewers, I mean, it's up like ridiculous amounts. And I think that with younger viewers, it probably is too. It's just that it's not reflected in TV ratings.
What did Kadani have to say? Flabbergasted the Netflix deal?
The thing, I mean, you know, he talked about a number of different things. I mean, the Yoda Tsuji interview really broke his heart. He said he couldn't sleep. And really, you know, I don't know. The Tsuji interview, it was, I didn't think it was smart on his part at all. You know, it's like,
tell everybody what he said.
Basically said that they treat them like that they're disposable cards because, you know, they run a card business and they don't treat them like human beings. And, you know, if you're running that company and you put so much money and so much work into building that company, I mean, you know, the from when Kadani first bought the company at you know, in those early period, I mean, as far as the people on the wrestling side, they were not, you know, it's like a rich guy who doesn't come from wrestling, even though he's a big fan, and there's the feeling that he doesn't know what he's doing and things like that. But, you know, I mean, the company grew, and there's a lot of reasons for the growth, but one of them absolutely was that they promoted it much, much, much harder. They really worked on it, and his goal was to be, you know, from the start, was to be, you know, the level of WWE and UFC. That was the goal. And he hired Harold May, you know, could say a lot of good or bad about Harold May. I mean, their business was growing, but then they hit the pandemic, and then they lost a lot of talent. Then he talked about how he, you know, he said like he was thinking in 2019 of selling, and it's kind of like, I don't know, like I was there, you know, when that whole thing went down, when, you know, Omega left and all that, you know, and the Young Bucks, and it's like they can say all they want that, oh, you know, this is almost like on the deal, you know, on the dark side deal, where, you know, when Eric spearheaded the idea of going head to head on Monday, and now everyone's like, what a stupid idea, not realizing that everybody was pushing for that with Spike from day one. Spike was the one that didn't want to do it, and Eric was, you know, and Dixie were the ones who were able to finally push Spike to do it. Now it's just like, oh, this was the dumbest idea in the world. I mean, the playbook that we knew showed that you go head-to-head, it creates more awareness of wrestling, and in the secondary brand, the last time it happened in the 90s, and it's a different, it was a different world, obviously, at that point, wrestling, you know, it didn't work at all. But going in, if you looked at history, you would think that that's probably the best thing you could have done for TNA. So anyway, this is similar. You know, when I hear this, it's kind of like, I know what they thought when AEW started. And if they didn't think that, they would have been in business with AEW from day one. I mean, they're saying like, oh, as soon as AEW started, I knew it was done. It's like, no. I know New Japan, and I know that they believed that AEW wasn't going to last. They didn't understand the importance of the TNT deal, which was the original deal. You know, I mean, now it's TBS, but then it was TNT. They didn't, you know, they just thought, rich guy doesn't know wrestling, and he's having a bunch of wrestlers run the show that are totally young and inexperienced at doing it. It's a recipe for a disaster. We're not going to get involved with these people. Now they're saying it's like, oh yeah, as soon as he got in, we knew that we were in trouble and we wanted to sell. That's bullshit. Okay, that's just bullshit. But you know, he said that the one that put him over the edge, Kidani's belief was always that we are going to be in better shape than everyone else because the American companies all depend on TV money, and at some point this TV money is going to collapse, and they will have built businesses that cannot be sustained, and then they will be in a lot of trouble. Whereas our business, yes, we have TV money, but if you take the TV money away, we're fine because we, you know, we budget based on arena, you know, the ticket sales, the merchandise sales, the New Japan World sales. You know, we generate all our own money. We don't have money, or not all of it, because they do get TV rights, but it's not a big number. But, you know, we generate all our money, whereas they don't generate their money. They get handed money for a TV product. And he thought that at some point that would go away. And the day that WWE signed the 10-year deal with Netflix, he realized at $500 million a year that it's not going away. And I think that was, you know, they couldn't compete. And I think once he realized they couldn't compete, and his dream of being, you know, the Vince McMahon or whatever, the, you know, one of the top players, the Dana White, it was over. It wasn't going to happen. It probably never could happen, being based in Japan. I mean, I think that no matter what, I think being based in Japan, it couldn't happen. Even if you, you know, like in the late 2010s, when he's sitting there, he's probably going like, look at us. We got the best wrestlers in the world. Our wrestlers are better than anybody else. We have the best shows in the world. You know, I mean, it's just a matter of time of getting exposure. And that was never going to happen when they're based in Tokyo. No matter what, no matter, even if they got English-speaking stuff, it's on New Japan World, or they're on Access TV, which is, you know, such a small station, it's not going to make the slightest bit of difference in the big picture. And but anyway, yeah, that was the whole thing. But I call total bullshit on the 2019 thing. The as far as like the day they signed with Netflix and him having that realization, I absolutely can believe that one.
All right, ratings notes.
Yeah, so let me just get TNA on Thursday. We're up to the Thursday. The rest of it will be out. All the weekend stuff will be out tomorrow. But TNA on Thursday did 286,000, 0.03. It was the largest audience for a TNA episode since they have gone on AMC. And this comes after they were at 0.02 or perhaps even lower, because the last 2 weeks we never even got a number because it was so low. I believe June 4th would have been the last 0.03. So from June 11th until last week, they were at 0.02 or lower. And this week they come out and they're, it's not their best demo, but it's their best total viewer number. So for whatever reason, it's certainly a good sign that then they were probably very, very happy about that. Wednesday, AEW, obviously, the best number that they've done in years. 787,000, 0.15 was the number, and 786,000 actually. And as far as any other stuff, and you know, they did have you know, like with the show the week before with Omega, they did not have a ton of competition. I mean, they did have Caitlin Clark, that's real competition, you know, in a WNBA game, several other sports, but nothing big. It's not like it's, you know, the World Cup, right? You know, and the NBA playoffs. I mean, they just were hit with that. So a very good number, you know, especially they were second for the night in 18-49. So very successful. They're way, way up. I mean, if you do panel, apples to apples from a year ago, this week and a year ago, let me just get this, because it's actually pretty fascinating. It was up 60% from the show, the same show a year ago in viewers. It was up 38% in 1849 and up 72% over 50. That's amazing increases year over year. NXT got hammered by the All-Star game. They were also preempted here. You know, I actually never saw the show because it didn't air here. But, yeah, they do. Was it 538,000 viewers, 0.05, which is one of the lowest demos, I think. I think that's the lowest demo for a regular show that they've ever done. So, yeah, the All-Star game just hammered them. And that's the numbers.
CMLL.
Yes. So I don't have the Friday show yet. They haven't announced it. I mean, I know it's the first of the Leyenda de Plata, and I know Commander's going to be there, along with, you know, probably most of the top stars, other than Mystico, who I'm certainly expecting will be kept out of action for at least a little while. I think, I'd like to think he'll be back for Grand Slam Mexico. I can't say that 100%, but it would make sense. But then again, you know, they're shooting a big angle. At the same time, you know, the angle's probably being shot for anniversary. Anniversary's already sold out. So it's not like, you know, we still need to sell tickets, so we need to keep them out longer. Because it's really, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just an angle for an angle's sake. You know, it's like you got no tickets left to sell. So it's just, they did an angle to do an angle and to have a memorable show. And, you know, I think that's like the key thing, is that they're trying, you know, with that anniversary show. So I watched a little bit just to see the difference between being there and watching it on streaming. And it was what people told me it would be. It's like the matches that I saw that were absolutely fantastic live, they were like the main events were the normal main events. The only difference is that streaming, they don't capture the crowd at all. I mean, you can hear some of the highs and lows, but I mean, it's nothing. It's like these matches, the amount of heat at these matches is just so ridiculous, you know, compared to anything. You know, I've been to the WWE shows here, been to the AEW shows here. It's you know, like, it's not, it's just not even in the same league, you know. I mean, it's not, it's like, but when you watch on streaming, you know, you can, you know, the matches look really good, the moves look really good, you know, but you don't get, I mean, you do not get how good these people are at working a live crowd, at playing, you know, playing the audience, at not so much know, I guess a little bit knowing when to do what. I mean, because certainly a lot of them are very good at that, but more the improvisational stuff of, you know, just playing off the crowd. You know, like when you do a big move and you know, like Oscar Dorado does the big thing and he jumps on the barricade and everything like that, and it does it at the right time, you know, and it gets big reactions. The heels know how to heal. You know, I mean, but I mean, it, a lot of it's just the crowd. I mean, it's just a very, you know, you go there. I mean, it's a hot product. I mean, it reminded me of, you know, hot products from decades and decades ago. You know, Arena Coliseo was, you know, Dallas Sportatorium 1983, except, you know, it wasn't like maybe, you know, two matches with Von Erichs. It's like every match is with the Von Erichs. The women's match is like with the Von Erichs. The people are just screaming so loud, and they have a wide, you know, they have a local audience that's super, super into it. They have a tourist audience that's, you know, it gets very, very entertained by that style of wrestling. You know, and they got, you know, a lot of women fans. It's just a, you know, it ain't gonna last forever. It never does, you know. I mean, the one thing I'll say is from being around those guys, they don't take it for granted. Like when that show, whatever it was, whether it's Friday or Saturday, when that show sells out, it's like that's a pop there. You know, it's not like, oh, another sellout, big deal. It's like it's still a big deal. When it becomes like WWE, where they take it for granted, that will be the beginning of the end, because it always is. But right now, they are not there, and I don't know if they'll ever be there. You know, I think some of it's also because the guy in charge, Salvador, I mean, he's been through this thing since, you know, childhood in a lot of ways, right? His father ran it, his grandfather ran it, he's run it for decades. They've been through the highs, they've been through the lows. So it's like they've been in booming periods before, and it went down. So it's not like they're sitting there going like those people in the WWE Attitude Era that had never been around it and just thought, we've invented the wheel and it's going to be like this forever. And some of the people who'd been around wrestling for a long time, like me, were going like, nothing's forever. You know, there's always going to be ups and there's always going to be downs. And eventually, you know, it's just, you know, the top stars, you know, are going to, you know, you have to, the top stars are that draw, you know, they don't last forever, and you got to get new people in, and the new people in, you know, even if they're great wrestlers, not all, you know, great wrestlers all by themselves and great wrestling matches, that's not going to keep the sellout streak going. I mean, even with that, I mean, you need that transcendent performer, and they got one, and they got a couple of others that are you know, great support performers, and they do give you a great show from start to finish. And they don't need Mystico to draw these sellouts, but, you know, it's still, they're in a hot period, and it's just, it's fun to watch them in a hot period. But yeah, like the streaming service and everything, like you do not even get close to the feel of being there. I mean, it's just so much hotter than an AEW crowd or a WWE crowd. I mean, and you'll see it, you know, because AEW will probably mic it really well on August 5th, and WWE will probably mic it really well, you know, for Triple Mania in Mexico City as well. And you'll see that, and you know, I don't know if they'll be as hot as every Friday, and or certainly Saturday, because Saturday's the really hot crowd. I mean, more than Friday even. I mean, as far as like, that Saturday show was, man, that is a great place to go to see wrestling, Arena Coliseum on Saturday night.
All right, before we get to Raw, what's up with McGregor?
Torn ACL, torn meniscus. You know, I mean, I think everyone pretty much expected that. So, you know, he'll be out for however long. I mean, he wants to do another fight because he can be a free agent. I don't know that. Put it this way. I don't know if he does another fight or he fights outside the UFC at this stage of the game that he will be a big draw. I it's like at some point, you know, with even Mike Tyson after a while, who's fantastic drawing card, after a certain period, people stop taking him seriously as a top guy. And I think Conor's in that same boat right now. If he loses his, I mean, if he wins a fight and it's against somebody really good in his next fight, maybe that will bring it back. But the odds of him beating a really good guy after this knee surgery, coming off of the other injuries and everything, and just the fact that he's blown himself up, you know, a weight class that he is not, his body is big enough for the weight class now. But the reality is that his bone structure is not, you know, you can put on all the muscle in the world, it does not give you a bigger bone structure. And so he's going to be facing guys that are just naturally stronger than him. And, at 170. I mean, he's really not a 170 guy, no matter how much he's blown himself up. And but anyway, it's like, if he does the last fight, then he becomes a free agent. And I do believe that there's going to be promoters everywhere just offering him ridiculous money, and they will lose their ass, because I do not think that outside of UFC, I don't think people are going to fall for him in boxing. They did with Mayweather fight, obviously, but, you know, I don't see that happening. And these other places, it's like, there's really not, you know, I mean, except for professional boxing against, like, a super top guy, I don't think that there's anything that he can do that would be bigger than UFC. He can make more money than UFC because of the way UFC pays, but that's probably only going to happen once because, you know, if he gets his giant, giant pay and then he does a pay-per-view or something and it doesn't pan out, you know, that company that has signed him for all that money is going to be losing. You're going to have many, many heavy losses on that. So he'll get one, but I don't know that he's going to. Some people think it's going to be, you know, the beginning of him just getting these giant numbers. I think he'll get one, and I think that after that, you know, the lay of the land, the promoters will realize that, his day is over as a big draw.
All right, we got Raw to talk about. This is followed by Saturday night's main event. And I'm a big advocate for video packages and recaps, but holy shit, this whole show was recaps and video packages.
They didn't have much, and they only went 2 hours and 15 minutes also.
Yes, my God. Yeah. Because they had Saturday night's main event. They had this SummerSlam kickoff thing yesterday. 2 weeks before SummerSlam, they had the kickoff. And, like, they shot a bunch of angles there, and they had to show them all in the show. They had to show the angles from Saturday night's main event. They had to show the angles from SmackDown. They had to show the angles from the Saturday night's main event pre-show. And it was just like, oh, my God. There's a lot on this show. None of it is new stuff.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that. You know, the only good match I thought everything's okay, but I mean the only good match was the first one with Javon and Dragon Lee against Breaker and Austin Theory, and then everything else was just kind of like we're headed to SummerSlam, and there's a few minor turns here and there, you know, twists and stuff, but it's weird because it's like LA Knight, just an example, he's out there doing this babyface promo. And they're all chanting OTC at him. And then he's basically going like, you know.
He's a baby face, cutting a baby face promo on two baby faces that he doesn't like. And so he's burying them.
And they're more popular than he is.
Yes, it was
but
bizarre.
It's just the way the feud is. But it's like there have been weeks where he's been able to go out there. And because he's such a good promo guy that but even then,
well, no, because every time he brings up Roman Reigns, this is not the first time this has happened.
When he brings up Roman Reigns, it's always always trouble, and then he has to start fighting the fans, and that did happen again. He tries to make Roman Reigns to be a heel, And, you know, reality-wise, what Roman Reigns does is a heel, but these people will not boo him. He is the guy right now. He is the cool guy. And, yes, when you're a babyface and you try to run him down, it's not going to go well. And, I mean, you can see it with L.A. Knight that it's... I mean, he reacts to it. I don't know how, you know, you can't ignore it, but he reacts to it in a way where it weakens him.
It opened up with Javon and Dragon Lee versus The Vision, and it was your typical match. They
were good.
Cut off Javon for a while, then Dragon got a hot tag, cut him off for a while, and then Javon did this great hot tag, and they actually redid the spot they did last week where Javon dumped Braun in the timekeeper's area and did a running dive. And last week he dove so far he actually ended up in the front row. He didn't go that far this time. So ends up back in the ring. Dragon tags in. And then Maxine ends up grabbing Dragon's leg behind the referee's back. Braun gives him a lariat. Javon goes to make the save. Braun spears him. And then Braun kills Dragon with a sprinting lariat and pins him. So at least they didn't pin Javon for once. And then we had the heels beating down the babyfaces. Otis and Tozawa come down. And before they beat him up, they gave Otis and Tozawa a lot. And
they
actually,
gave Otis
like,
a lot.
They
gave Otis a lot. Tozawa, not so much.
Otis just kills these dudes, and then they try and cut him off, and he kills them again. And finally, they got a hold of both guys, and they killed Tozawa, and they... Braun speared Otis outside as he tried to put Theory through the announce table. Throws him in the ring, hits another spear, kills him. So it looks like that's the match. Braun Breaker.
No, they're doing the match next week on Raw. It's
yeah.
already been announced.
That's the match. Braun Breaker and Theory it's against Otis and Tozawa.
Yeah, it looks like it's a non-title match, though.
We had clips of the Tom Brady, Logan Paul slap.
That's a slow burn because Logan Paul ain't going to be able to do anything for a while.
Well, if Tom Brady's wrestling, he probably should train at least for a while.
Yes, and it has to be at WrestleMania.
And he flat out said, I want to have one match.
Yeah.
So it looks like he's going to have one match.
Yeah. Well, he wants to do, you know, he's a big star. He wants to do a match. They'll let him do a match. I mean, someone at that level... I mean, look, I don't care what promotion in what period, if it was WCW or Vern Gagne or Tony Khan, if Tom Brady comes in and says he wants to do a match, you know, they'll let him to do a match. So I see like people criticizing this, oh, it's WWE and blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, they do way too much with celebrities. I mean, it's like, it's not... Like, if you do it every now and then, it works. If you do it all the time, it becomes annoying. But Tom Brady, he's a different level celebrity, you know? I mean, no other promoter would turn it down. That's just basic wrestling. I mean, will it be good? You know, probably not. You know, I don't know. You know, maybe, you know, he's
well,
a great
the fact
athlete.
Of the matter is this. If you got CM Punk as a champion on one side, and you got Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar on the other side, and Cody Rhodes is not in the championship picture, and they always do the QB1 thing with him. I mean, you can do a tag. It'd probably be the best idea, honestly.
The tag would be the best idea. And they did affiliate them, you know, when they did that angle. So, that would make sense.
We had Judgment Day threatening Danhausen, and they want their money back. He said, give me 30 seconds. So they do a big cast.
I do believe that they're overdoing this Danhausen thing. You know,
they'll run it into the ground before they back.
They
off
will run it. In,
that's
they
what
will
they
run,
do.
They will. Yeah, they will run this one. I mean, from day one, I knew that they would run it into the ground. It will be good for a while, and then you know it will run its course, and they will realize it run its course about 4 months after it runs its course. They'll kind of finally have to deal with it.
Well, before they got to that, we had a clip of the Big Cass return gimmick, and they did have a bunch of like clippings acknowledging personal issues and getting fired, and
yes, his story is going to be about getting fired and the drinking problems and things like that and overcoming that. So it looks, you know, that's a babyface spot. that they're you know, overcoming your drinking problems is definitely a babyface positioning, and we'll see. I mean, he's got something.
I just remember those Lacey Evans. Remember those guys who won Vince back? You guys remember when Lacey Evans did about 6 weeks talking about legitimate tragedies and difficulties that she overcame, and she returned as a heel?
And then they turned her. Then they brought her in as a heel. Yeah, yeah.
And then, surprisingly, it didn't get over. Yeah. Who would have ever thought?
Yeah.
So Danhausen comes out with a briefcase, and he said, I thought I took care of the Judgment Day this weekend, but they still want their money back. It's causing a problem. So they come out. They want the money. They go to beat him down. Joe Hendry runs down to make the save. Liv grabs the briefcase full of money, and they bail. So they get backstage. They're all screaming at each other. Adam Pearce is there. JD opens the briefcase, reveals it's not even real money, and he throws a bag over his shoulder, and of course it hits Oba Femi on accident, and Oba comes up, and of course Danhausen throws JD under the bus, and Oba says, you know, I should kill you for this. And so Pierce gleefully signs the death warrant for JD here. And that was next. Oba killed him. JD took a great beating for about 1 minute. And then Oba looked in the camera and said, no more goofy shit. The real money is at Hell in a Cell. And away he went. Mm-hmm. That was effective. Mm-hmm. That's what you do with that guy. Solo comes out for a promo. Calls out Seth Rollins. This whole thing is just so bizarre. Solo's supposed to be a babyface. He calls out Seth. Seth comes down to the ring. Solo says, I know what you're trying to do with Roman, but listen, he's going to show up with all the bloodline. If you want, I'll be there in your corner at SummerSlam. Seth goes, I'll think about it. Solo then grabs him, and he's like, what are you talking about? There's nothing to think about here. It's written on the wall. This is going to work. He's a total heel. And then Fatu comes out. So Solo bails. And then Seth lays out Fatu with a super kick and leaves. So we got LA Knight, who's a babyface, cutting promos on two other babyfaces, which is getting him a heel reaction. We got Solo, who was a heel, but he's now joined the babyfaces. I think we're supposed to like him, but he's still a total heel.
He's not very likable.
No.
He's not a natural babyface at all. I mean,
actually, in real life, apparently he is. But like,
we're not talking real life. We're talking wrestling.
I know, but the point is, if you're like that in real life, you should be able to portray that character on television, and he isn't. He's exactly like he was before, but now supposed to like him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was really convoluted. You know, when the Tongans walked out on him, the idea was it was like sympathy for him. But I thought watching it,
they did what was right.
That they did what was right, exactly. It didn't lead any sympathy because he was trying to use them and take them out of, you know, challenging for championships and things like that. And, you know, worrying about, you know, all of his decision making. So, in time maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. So far, I'd say no. Not as a baby face. But they're putting him in the spot and with good people. But, I mean, that's a weird one because that six-man tag, the reality is they're all six baby faces. And, how will the crowd... I mean, Jacob's certainly a baby face. The Usos are weird because they right now, the Usos are, for the most part, acting like heels, but the crowd loves especially Jay.
Well, the funny thing is Jay acts more heelish, but they love him. Jimmy's the one who actually acts like a baby face most of the time.
But he's still a.
And he's in the heel group.
He's still, you know, basically running Roman stuff. But Roman's a babyface. But as a group, you know, as a group, they act like heels. But they're all cheered. So it's that's just what it is. They don't have heels. So it's going to be tough for the Royce Keys team when you're going against more popular babyfaces and you're a babyface. It's tough.
All right, so then we had Chad Gable and Penta against Ethan Page and Rusev. And actually, I mean, this was the hardest they pushed Chad Gable since he came back. Like, he actually didn't get his ass kicked the entire match. He made the big comeback, ran wild, suplexed everybody left and right, put on the ankle lock on Rusev. Page tries to make the save. Penta gives him the destroyer off Rusev's back, and Rusev taps out
Yep.
And then Chad and Penta kind of, you know, they kind of had a stare down, but then Chad gave him the belt and raised his hand, and this new music fucking sucks, but this was a step forward for this Chad Gable character for the first time since he came back.
Yeah, the one thing with the new, I mean, the new music is there specifically designed to get people to sing, which they haven't done yet.
And clap their hands, which
and clap their hands
almost none of them do.
Which they did not do, and when he's doing it, leading them, and they don't do it, it's kind of geeky, actually. But, I mean, at some point, either they're going to have to do it, or he's going to have to stop doing it, you know, because when you're doing it, leading the crowd, and they don't do it, and you're a baby face, not the best thing. It's still early enough in the game, but, you know, I mean, I would think in the long run that they will, because that's what a WWE crowd does. But, yeah, tonight I thought, okay, you know, it's like it's been on TV for a couple weeks. He's going to do that clap, does the clap. Nobody does it with him. Ugh. Anyway.
Seth ran into Jacob backstage and dares him to hit him, but Jacob won't do it. So Seth said, well, I know the game. You're under strict orders from Roman. Don't lay a finger on me. So let me ask you this. When I beat Roman, do I get this title and this bag boy? And Jacob said, you got one up on me earlier today. It's not going to happen no more. If there's anything left of you after SummerSlam, I'll beat your ass. And away he went. We had a very good Paul Heyman promo about Lesnar and Obafemi. Nothing you haven't heard before. You know, building up the match and Brock Lesnar's streak inside the cage. And it was very good.
You see they got the tickets up to 27,000?
They put some discounts out and...
Well, it's $25.
Up 4,000 tickets in the last 4 or 5 days.
Yeah. That you know, it's funny because in that quick, that many tickets, I think that some of them had to be paper too. I mean, even with a $25 ticket, that's a lot in a few days. I mean, AEW did 3,000.
Well, it's possible, but at the same time, it's like WWE's ticket structure has been such for so long that I think a lot of people in the area know to wait.
Oh, no, with WWE, and for sure people.
There were probably a lot of people waiting for those to drop, and then they got them. So I'm not surprised by 4,000, to be honest, because they were probably just waiting around, because they knew it was going to happen, and it did.
Yeah,
so
it always does. As soon as
they drop, you got to get them, because, you know, they'll drop again later, but you want to get the best tickets you can when they drop, so... I think they probably were all
well in a stadium like that. There's a lot of tickets.
Yeah, they're,
you know, I mean, they could sell 67,000, and they're at 27. So I mean, there's a lot of tickets. That
there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, there's a lot of tickets. There's a lot of tickets at a very low price that you can still sell or give away.
Joe Hendry and Dominic Mysterio. So they're doing this match. Liv comes down behind the referee's back. She posts Hendry. Danhausen comes to ringside. He tries to curse her, but she just punches him out. He leaves to the back. So back in the ring, he ends up returning with Io Sky, Danhausen. So Io and Liv get into a big brawl. And then they're doing some stuff, and the referee gets distracted. And as this happens, Danhausen hits the ring, lays out Dom with the death drop. Joe covers and gets the pin. It's another one of those things where, like, we did talk about how they're going to burn out this Danhausen thing, but... Man, these people went nuts for the last 2 minutes of this match. I mean, they were totally into it, so it's still working.
Well, it's early in the game, too. You know, when you overdo it with those type of people, you know, it always, someone like that always has shelf life, you know? So, you know, you just gotta, you know, I mean, right now it's working, sure.
Had clips of a Cody and Punk thing yesterday, and then we had a Saturday night's main event recap. And then LA Knight comes out for a promo, which we talked about, which is basically him saying, Solo, what the hell's going on? I trusted you. I was going to do one match with you, but then you have to buddy up with Seth Rollins. I don't like Roman. I don't like Seth. I hate these guys. Who wants to help this Seth Rollins guy? And he said, let's just destroy the bloodline and make sure they're not a factor tonight. And Jacob Fatu, he says, you can try whatever you want to, but you're not going to beat me. So that's the main event. And it's LA Knight versus Jacob Fatu, and it was a fine match. It wasn't a blowaway or anything like that. LA hits the BFT. Jimmy comes out, takes the ref. Royce Keyes comes down. He attacks Jimmy, tosses him over the announce table. Jay returns through the crowd, super kicks Royce, and then LA wipes him out with a dive, but he's distracted as he gets back in the ring, and Fatu hits the pop-up powerbomb. the PME, which they're calling the money moonsault, and gets the pin. So afterwards, you know, it's all the six guys and the bizarre six man at SummerSlam, and it's just everybody hitting a big move on everybody else, and finally the heels take control, and they kill LA with the running hip attack. Jay hits a big splash. I will say this. It's a weird match, as we've talked about. The Usos and Jacob Fatu, LA Knight, Royce Keys, and Fatu, or Solo. His name is Fatu. But anyway, it's a weird match. It seems like just some random TV match. But I will say that the post-match they did here at least made it feel like, all right, fine, that's a SummerSlam match. So that's an improvement.
Well, I mean, they're getting promo time in their top guys. You know, I mean, Solo's a top guy. LA Knight's top promo guy. So, you know,
I will say that when I watched this, my guess is that probably I have to think about this.
But LA Knight and Solo won't get along.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that's going to happen, but. I presume that Roman beats Seth, and then I think LA might win this match for the team, and then Roman and LA will be the fall, just something to do feud. Because, geez, LA Knight's been complaining about Roman for like 3 months now. They have to feud for the title. I mean, otherwise it's a complete waste of time the last 3 months.
He just got pinned.
I know. That's why I think he's going to win the six man.
He could. I mean, you could do it. He's been talking about Roman for a long time, sure. You know, something. It's something.
All right, next 2 days before we go, NXT has got Tony D versus Naraku in a street fight. I wouldn't be surprised if Oromu debuted here. It's like this feels like everything that we expected them to do with the last PLE, but instead they did a 10-minute nothing match in the opener.
Well, they just trademarked his name.
And maybe he had a visa issue. Maybe he couldn't get in until now.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
That's why they did that last time.
Yeah. Clone and Mordo still have visa issues in AEW.
Saquon Noam Dar and Romeo Moreno versus Dark State. Reina Volkan will debut against Skylar Rae. Sean Spears against Nico Vance. And Natty versus Jada Parker again, which was great the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dynamite Wednesday, we have four matches. Kenny Will and Jon Moxley versus Brian Cage, Hechicero, and Jake Doyle. The Kevin Knight Darby match.
That'll probably be insane.
I would presume so. I presume that somebody screws Darby to lead to a Darby match at the pay-per-view.
Could.
Because you cannot beat Kevin Knight right before that pay-per-view.
Oh, no. Kevin Knight's got to win. Kevin Knight's winning that match. Has to, yeah.
Jay White and Clark Connors. And then Divine Dominion versus Sisters of Sin in a no DQ match, which is very interesting because Julian Sky Blue just won those trios titles,
mm-hmm.
and apparently we'll go right in to lose to the tag team champions. So
yeah, but those aren't the AEW trios titles; those are the Stardom trios.
Well, of course, but I mean, they just won the titles in another company.
Well, Dominic Mysterio is the AAA World Champion.
Yeah, do you advocate for him losing all these matches? Because I don't.
I do not. No, yeah. but you know, I don't. You know. It's like when you have all those titles, they don't necessarily all mean a lot.
All right, we're going to wrap it up for today. AEW and NXT on Wednesday, as well as all of the news. Dave and I were up yesterday from Mexico, in fact. Dave was still there. And New Observer will come out on Friday. The issue for this past week's already up, so check that out. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.